On Jimmy D and the Wolf Live Podcast.
What up?
Hey, everybody. Our schedules are whacked. We're supposed to be doing these on Monday. We're a day late. Sorry about that. Hopefully we can get things a little straighter. But my nephew does a podcast, Unscripted Banter. Check it out. And based on my understanding and my observation, he violates the scheduling more than he meets it. Sorry, Seth.
The worst part that we missed last week is that you were in Indiana.
Yeah. We could have done it with each other, but glad to be here now. There's a whole slew of them that haven't been put up on the podcasting program. And there's a reason for that. We got to get there's just kind of steps of summarizing them. Got to watch them and summarize them. Anybody want to volunteer to do that?
Yeah, if you'd like to volunteer to edit our videos and post them to YouTube. we'll give you a free Tim Wolf pop socket.
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go.
Yeah. So what's been going on?
Man, as much as I hate to admit it, I've been watching a lot of TV. I don't normally watch much television, but I'm probably the last person in the country to discover the show Pawn Stars. And I just watched this series, The Last Dance, about Michael Jordan, which was incredible because I despise Jordan being an NBA fan and not understanding for many reasons. It's sort of like that thing, it's like the Tom Brady effect, you know. I wanted the Patriots to win their first Super Bowl, and then after that I just wanted to see them lose every time. Like, it's a funny thing with people, man. Once you're a winner and you start winning, like if you're a perennial winner, everybody wants to see you fail. And I always had that thing with Jordan where it was like I couldn't stand him because I knew he was going to win, and especially because he beat our Pacers in the Eastern Conference championship and the greatest Pacer team we ever had that should have won because we were stacked that season. We had Mark Jackson and Reggie and the Davis brothers, Rick Smith. They were stacked. It was like the best Pacers team ever. And Jordan's basically.
And you had Larry Bird, amazing coach.
Yeah, Larry Bird was the coach. He's worked wonders with the Pacers, man. But it's funny because they showed it, and I think you may have mentioned this too. They showed it on the series of when Reggie hits the shot and there's like 1 second left and everybody on the Pacers sideline is going crazy. And then the camera pans to Larry Bird and Larry Bird is like, because he knew. He's like, man, like an 85% chance Jordan's going to make this shot with 1 second. And he did, and he beat us. But I've always really strongly disliked Jordan until watching that series, and it's hard not to love the guy, man. He's just such a competitor, and he loved the game so much that you'd see him get teared up while he was talking about it. And I have a newfound respect for him, kind of like I did Tom Brady when I saw some interviews with Brady where he would talk about his dad and he'd get all emotional and teared up. How can you not respect those guys, man? You know, just fierce competitors.
Yeah, and I remember when his dad – I mean, yes, I finished the series myself as well, and it took me a while, even though I'm a huge NBA fan. Everybody was talking about it when I first went live, and I put it off because, for just like you, he beat the teams that I was rooting for.
Right.
I didn't want him to succeed. And I was at some of those games. I was in sales at the time with a Pat and Spence account. And I remember one of my customers, one of the buyers of one of our major customers in Chicago or close to Chicago, was a huge Bulls fan. And the second year, when they won the second one, whichever year that was, 91, 92, whatever year that was, I had tickets to the game. And it was the first game of that series, the finals. I think it cost $500. It was pretty close. It was like row five. It was on the end behind the bucket. behind the basket, and that was the basket that Jordan put in those 7 or 8 threes in the first half. And then he goes like this. You know, that game, I was at that game with my customer, company paid for it, my expense account. You know, so it was amazing to be there. I mean, Jordan was amazing. I mean, where was I going with that? But, he was – I still didn't want him to lose. I was living in New York at the time. The Celtics were nothing as a team. There was a 20-year black hole there. And I was rooting for the Celtics. I actually had tickets to the Celtics. And I remember – well, I remember when Reggie got, like, 8 points in 8 seconds.
Right.
Bagger.
Next, man.
I think I was at that game also because I had mini season tickets. They weren't full season, but a buddy and I that I worked with, or a coworker, and I went in on it, and it was an experience to be there because a lot of celebrities. We had nosebleed seats way up, but you could get your binoculars and see all the celebrities on the front row, and remember,
especially the Knicks.
Yeah, New York City. I mean, you know, that's a lot of big stars there. You know, I remember Stone. What's her name? The girl, Sharon Stone. Sharon Stone was. I remember seeing her there. You know, and of course, a lot of big stars. It was just fun and interesting. But Jordan would come to town, and of course, those 2 years Jordan was retired when I was in New York. And say that again. You cut out there.
He was playing baseball.
He's playing baseball, you know, and I love that series. It really gave me a newfound respect. I mean, for the guy, I mean, he's serious, and it was really interesting. I loved how they would show him an iPad with what other people had said for the documentary. And
great, it's like they got all this information from everybody else and then brought it to him.
Yeah.
So him relive it, and then hearing his side of the story was great, man. And especially like the Pistons stuff with Isaiah Thomas. That's when I was really starting to get into basketball. I mean, the Pistons were king when I started watching basketball about 11 or 12 years old. It was the Bad Boys, you know. And just hearing his take on that, I think they kind of turned him into the monster that he became, because they just beat him up, you know, so over and over and over again. He was getting beat up. I think it helped develop his mentality.
Yeah. I mean, everybody has to overcome, you know, people push to overcome something and then that makes them a better person. I mean, the Pistons had to overcome the Celtics. They kept getting beat by the Celtics when the big three were aging, you know, and of course, I'm a Celtics fan. And finally, they did beat them, you know. And then they went on to win two. When they finally got through the Celtics, they won two in a row. They were repeat, I believe, right? Weren't they? The Pistons were repeat. Of course, they also defeated the Bulls then too. The Bulls were ascending. And I saw Jordan come to the Garden, the old Garden, back in the day when he had an obstructed view seats. And you could get them, if my memory serves, $5 the day of the game, $5 for a seat. Obstructed view, because they had these old pillars. It was not well designed. It was an old building. And, of course, by the second half, people would leave, and you could move down to better seats. I'm sure you couldn't do that in a playoff game. And it was a game against the Bulls, and Jordan was so flashy, and he had 40 points. And I remember thinking, oh, my gosh. And then, of course, Larry Bird was my guy, and I said, where's Larry? How come he's not getting points? And I looked at the stats, and he had quietly gotten 45 points. But watching the game, it didn't seem like he had scored much, because Jordan was so flashy.
Right.
You know, I was like shocked when Larry got more than Michael. Just the way, yeah, I was at that game. I was privileged to be at that game. Paying $5 for the seat, can you imagine it? That would never happen today.
That's amazing. When I was a little boy, we didn't have much money, but my brother would take me to Indianapolis Colts games because it was $6 a ticket back then.
Ah.
But we we had the worst football team, man. When I was little, I remember we were 1-15 one season and 2-14 the next. We were just terrible. So you could go up there and get good seats for $6 a pop from scalpers. Like, you didn't even have to buy them beforehand. You could just show up to the stadium and still get them for $6. And like, 2/3 of the stadium would be empty because we were so bad. They just weren't good forever and ever and ever. And, you know, kind of like what Jordan did for the Bulls, Peyton did that. We were garbage for a long time, man. It was a failing franchise. And he's like, Jordan sort of single-handedly brought the Bulls back. Peyton single-handedly kind of brought the Colts back. You know?
Yeah. Well, on to another series. What was the other series you said you just watched? You said
Monsters.
Yeah, when I was there, you watched some of that. You had not gotten into that much before?
No. And what's funny is my wife's seen every single one of them. But what's really funny is Marshall, my 11-year-old son, he's all about it. He watched it with me the other night, and he was super into it. So it's, you know, it's kind of a big deal for me because you find something that one of your kids is into that you're into with the generation gap. Those things are few and far between sometimes. None of my kids are really into music or, you know.
Yeah, I like those guys, you know, and Rick, I've seen interviews of him, and even, I think they're still making them. It's like 5 years ago, he was very modest about it. He said, you know, we got lucky, and we know this is going to have a finite endpoint. You know, people get tired of it. You know, like, take a show, Duck Dynasty. Duck Dynasty was a huge show, right. And now they're done, you know, and who even thinks of them now? I mean, they're, you know, you have your, it's like music stars. Most music stars, you have your place near the sun, and maybe it's short-lived or maybe it's a little longer, but you know, it's fleeting. Fame is fleeting, and he recognized that. He said, we're going to enjoy it while we can, cash in, it's a big money-making thing, but we know it isn't going to last that long. But it's continued to last, which is amazing. And then the old man died, you know, he was awesome. And yeah, they're just unique characters. Chumley. I mean, he's got a
lost a ton.
Sorry?
Those guys have lost a ton of weight.
Yeah, Chumley and his buddy, the son, number three, I've forgotten their names. But
Big Hoss.
Big Hoss.
Corey.
Oh, and the knowledge that Rick has on a lot of subjects. I mean, you can't snow him. If you're talking about historical military things or many other things, I mean, you got to recognize reality television is not reality television. A lot of it is scripted, and a lot of it is planned. And maybe they say, okay, you got this to sell. You're going to come in on this day, and Rick has already looked up all the information. I do recognize that stuff goes on. I don't know. But I believe that he does have a really good education, a lot of these things.
That's who that guy really is. I mean, he might have his cheat sheets, but that's who that guy really is. It's not like the Duck Dynasty thing. I couldn't watch that. My brother got real into it. I couldn't watch it because it just seemed disingenuous. I just feel like that wasn't who those guys really were when the camera wasn't on them. To me, it was a facade, you know? But Pawn Stars is cool because that's who... That's who those guys are. It's legit, and it comes across, and that's why it's holding up, I think.
There's another show I found, and they've got the recipe. I mean, today, if you're going to be successful... you got to have, you know, sex always sells. It always has, and it always will. You get a beautiful woman. And there's a show, I can't even remember what it's called now, but it's in California. And I binge watched the entire season. They're going to have another one. Constance Nunes is the woman on it. And she's model, gorgeous, just stunningly hot. And she is the woman in the garage. Literally, if you believe what they're pushing, she's the one who rebuilds the engines. There's four of them. I can't remember the name of the show, but I remember her name. I started following her on Instagram, and she's posing with these, you know, she's like the pinup on the car, but she's also the one who built the car. So that's 2020, you know, women can do anything. Whereas it used to be, you know, the pinup was just this beautiful woman who couldn't do anything. You know, that was probably the 50s, 60s, 70s, different generation. But now, you know, you got beautiful women who are wailing on guitar or whatever it is, And that's awesome. I love that. So anyway, that I can't remember the name of that show, but Rust to something maybe.
The statistic about, you threw that at me and I didn't know it. Was it 1/3 of the new guitar buyers are females? Something like that?
Oh, no, over half. Over half. Oh,
that's amazing.
Over half. Yeah.
So over half people
the
that
guys,
are
the young guys. The young guys are all okay. Yeah, I knew there. I got points for Tim. I remember there was Rust in the name. It's called Car Masters Rust to Riches. Constance Nunes is an American model and reality TV personality of Portuguese descent, born and raised in LA. She's known for extensive experience in the automotive industry and starring in the Netflix series Car Masters Rust to Riches. And it's really interesting. I mean, again, I don't know how much of it is planned out, but they find these cars and they mod them big time, change them, and then they sell them and trade them for the raw material to go to the next level. They're constantly looking for trading. They buy something at a lower end that they can afford, and they put money into it, bring it up to a level, cost customized, trade that to somebody who has another raw material beat up Hulk that they can, that's more expensive as at that level, and they continue ratcheting up until they get to a six-figure car. And then they sell that, and that's the plan. I mean, it seems you got to really know your market. Because when you get customized stuff, I mean, customized stuff, it rarely brings what you have to pay, I think, to build it. Like, here's an example in the news right now. Sylvester Stallone spent $450,000 customizing an SUV, stretching it. I think it's a Cadillac Esplanade. Customized $450,000, and he's trying to sell it for $350,000 and apparently not being able to. And it's got his name on it. So once you get into the customized realm, I feel that it's very, you know, rare air. It's, yeah,
and same thing with guitars.
Sure.
You start to mess with the original elements of the guitar, you destroy the value.
Yeah.
Mods are a big number. What is that? There's one behind you that I can't identify, Tim. There's a guitar behind you, and it's driving me insane that I can't identify
it. Which one? Is it back by the couch?
Where it's behind your left shoulder in plain view. What is that?
I think that's my oh. This one?
That one.
All right. Yeah. This one is, there's a guy named, this is called Bad. This is made in Japan. It's an interesting, it's a kind of a mashup between a Fender and a Les Paul, or, you know, Paul Reed Smith. It's got humbuckers, but it's got a bolt-on neck. So, and the scale length, I believe, is I got to measure it, but I'm pretty sure it's a Fender scale length. I'm sorry, a Les Paul scale length, so 24 3/4. Or it might be a 25. I think the Paul Reed Smiths are 25, aren't they? They're just a quarter inch longer. Versus a Strat is 25.5, right? Just, and the difference in that, little bit of difference, makes for a completely different sound.
Yeah.
You know, more jangly, the Strat. And the bolt-on neck makes it more jangly. So you got the bolt-on neck with the... And it's more of a shredder body. This, interesting story. There's a guy named Toshio. He's a luthier in Japan, Toshio. And I can't remember his last name, but people know him by Toshio. And he's a bass builder, Bosa Basses. And Bosa is a custom bass builder. I mean, they go for four figures, $2,000 to $5,000, I think. And there are people who love, you get on and you Google it, there are people who love his basses. And he, my friend Shuji Kobayashi, who lives in Japan, is a guitar player. And he, I haven't seen Shuji in a long time, but I used to hang out with him a lot when I lived in Japan. And he's got a 65 Strat.
Nice.
He was born in 65, and so he wanted to get that. He's Eric Johnson. He loves everything Eric Johnson.
About that guy.
Yeah, I've told you about him. He's a great guy, great guy. He helped. Toshi was down on his luck financially, and this was a red flag that I probably wouldn't have noticed, and he didn't notice. So Shuji went in and started a company with Toshio, and he wanted to find a new name for it. And he had gone to like the NAMM show, and the story goes how he picked the name. It's B-A-D-D, bad. And he would show his Bosa bases, and these base players would come, and they said, "That's bad, man. That's bad." And you know, Toshio's English is not the best, and he knows bad is not good.
Right.
You don't like my base? You don't like?
Exactly.
The guy explained, "No, that means it's good."
Yeah.
Oh, that means it's good. I will name my new guitar Bad Guitars.
English language where every word means 9 different things.
So that's the name of this guitar, and it's he wound his own. I mean, these pickups are bad pickups. He wound his own pickups, and this is quilted maple. I mean, this is, I've had this guitar for a long time, but this beautiful quilted maple, I picked out the color and everything. And I think this was the first one they made. I told Shuji, when you're making these, I want to be the very first guitar that you made. And I remember I met him, and it was in a room or apartment above Shuji's haircutter, has a hair salon, which is a high end thing in Japan. I mean, it's expensive to get your haircut because they have very expensive. Their scissors cost like $100 a piece or more. I mean, they're very serious about the craft of cutting hair. I mean, there's no, you know, great clips, or there wasn't in Japan. I mean, you get your haircut. It's a craftsperson who has really studied it. Anyway, so it was above, and I met Toshio, and he had guitar parts laying all around, and he built the guitar, and I bought it. And the problem is, Toshio, I mean, it's common knowledge if you Google it now. He's got some major, I guess, addiction issues or something. And he owed a lot of money to mob figures. And he was stealing from Shuji. And Shuji ended up having to sell his car to pay the debt. And I think Shuji, if you even mention, he probably, they separated, of course, on really bad terms. And I heard that Toshio was homeless for a while, this guitar builder. But I noticed that there's now Bosa basses being made. So he's back in business, and he may not even be alive anymore. I don't know how old he is, but that's the story of this guitar maker. I mean, it's still a great guitar. Yeah. I mean, there are people who, Shuji told me when he was still in business that the pickups were starting to get some reputation in Japan, and people were wanting the pickups, just the pickups alone. So, it's got coil splits. You can split each coil, single or double coil. So, you know, the design is kind of it's a very design. The body is, I would say, a very Japanese design, you know, isn't it? I mean, you know, just the way the upper bout is, you know, and it's super wide. This lower bout is super wide. It doesn't fit in most hard cases. I bought a hard case for it, and it wouldn't fit in it because it's much wider than a Les Paul. Look how wide that bottom bout is. You know, this area right here. You know, so it's a special guitar. And especially because my buddy, it was his company, and I think it was the first one they made, the first one they sold, you know, and means a lot to me. For a while, it was my number one guitar. I was playing it all the time in the bands I was in, and I haven't played it too much. I've been playing my Strat recently. But I brought it out recently for a solo I did on a video, a recent song I did. I did it in a, I used this guitar. So that's my bad guitar.
I think there's a general consensus amongst players that, you know, the only kind of guitars that hold up American guitars are Japanese guitars. They have
Boy, you're really breaking up. I hope it's on the recording, but say that again. Excuse me. Please say that again.
I was just saying that I think Japanese made guitars have a great reputation amongst players, as you know, that, you know, if you want something affordable, it's a great go-to guitar by Japanese.
Yeah, the made in Japan Fenders are, I think, high regarded, right?
Highly regarded. In that era, you know, in the early and mid 80s, they're better than the American made Fenders.
Yeah. American stuff was really a lot of crap. So thank you for asking about my bad guitar. I haven't been giving it much love. I'm thinking of I need to play it more. I mean, even the headstock. Look at the. He's got maple. There's maple. You know, there's quilted maple. Even on the detail there, that's laminated on the headstock. Can you see that?
Yeah.
He put the same quilted maple that's on the laminated on the top of the body with the top of the headstock. Although it's natural color, but I mean, look at that. I mean, there's.
It's ornate.
Yeah. You know, so dot inlays, but yeah, I do love my bad guitar. Say it again.
I didn't remember that one.
Oh, you did? Okay. Well, I might have had it behind the green screen, which I am going to get rid of that and have a green screen that comes down from the ceiling and then retracts. That is my plan, to buy a green screen that it'll be better. I won't have the wrinkles in it, and I won't have to edit that out. So editing it out is a pain when you get to the post-production thing. So I'm going to advance my tools, always stepping up another level, trying to always advance.
100%.
You know, so anyway, another thing that I just watched, and I realized that I'd watched it before, it's on Netflix, it's a 4-hour series on Bob Dylan, and it's about his early years, and I thought, man, this looks awful familiar, and it came out in 2005, and I must have rented the DVD, or maybe even have the DVD in a box somewhere, because I know I've seen it, and it's really interesting of his, how he came up. Now, he's from Minnesota, Hibbing, Minnesota, and I'm from South Dakota, so that's the next state over. And it talks about his early influences and how he started off doing all the covers, all the folk songs, and Woody Guthrie. And then he started writing. And, you know, everybody knows who Bob Dylan is. But the early, how he accelerated. And there was even talk about he went to New York and he came when he was only gone a year or maybe even less than a year. When he came back, there was talk that he did a Robert Johnson deal where he made a deal with the devil. And a lot of these great heroes have that period. Jimi Hendrix had it, right? I mean, it was about a year that Hendrix was just an average guitar player. I mean, you'd know more about Hendrix than I do. But he came back. He was in Nashville, I believe, in the military. And he studied under someone. And he came back, and he was at this whole other level.
Yeah.
And Dylan had the same kind of effect. People that knew him in Minneapolis. Well, he went from Hibbing to Minneapolis. Hibbing is small town, nothing there. And then he went to New York, and he was there for probably less than a year. It was a big folk scene. And when he came back and played in Minneapolis, they were like, this guy's at a whole nother level. So it's just kind of interesting how people go away and come back.
Well, they commit all the way to their craft. You know, those guys, they go all in with it. There's nothing else on their plate. And that's what Dylan did, and that's what Robert Johnson did, and that's what Hendrix did. You know, it's amazing how much ground you can cover, how far you can go quickly when it's just all about that. When you're not worried about paying bills or anything like that, you're just honed in on your craft. And I think that's what those guys did. And yeah. We all know what it is. It's like when you see an unbelievable musician, every musician knows it's time.
It's time, yeah.
It's no mystery to any of us. I mean, I don't watch like Tommy Emmanuel play guitar and go, oh, how did he do that? I know exactly how he's playing a guitar for 12 hours a day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those guys just go all in. And we understand that now, but I would imagine, especially the Robert Johnson thing, I think that's why there's so much folklore around it, that it was unknown to the masses. That whole style of guitar playing was unknown to the masses. So he got it from different people. You know, there are other people playing finger style, and
yeah, there's I've read some articles about some of the individuals that they think he might have gotten instruction from, and yeah. I don't remember the names. Same with Hendrix. There was one or two individuals in Nashville that he got instruction from, wasn't there?
Yeah, Johnny Johnson was one of them. There was a blues guy in Nashville named Johnny Johnson, and Hendrix would always go listen to Lenny Bro play. And Lenny Bro was an incredibly knowledgeable guitar player, and Hendrix would go listen to him and study him. And a lot of his influence came from different places, like the funk guys, you know. Ike Turner and Curtis Mayfield were big influences on him.
Yeah, I know Mayfield was. I love Mayfield's playing.
And Buddy Guy, too, you know.
Mayfield had a horrible accident when a lighting rig fell on him and paralyzed him from the neck down, was it?
Yeah.
Couldn't play guitar anymore. That's horrible.
Yeah. Player, man. I mean, great rhythmic concepts.
Yeah. Great. So anyway, talking about Dylan, one, you know, it had a bunch of concert footage when he went electric, and
he got booed.
He had Bloomfield behind him, Mike Bloomfield playing lead, like, these bluesy things, so far away from folk, and you can hear people shouting at him, "Judas, traitor!"
Right.
You can clearly hear people saying it, you know. And he was so stressed out. And then he got the band after. First, he had the band with Al Kooper in it, who was alive. The band, Al Kooper and Mike Bloomfield, all those guys from Chicago. And then he had the band with him after. And after he got done with the tour, he literally, and some of the questions he got asked were really funny and how he would respond. He had no patience for all these people sticking a microphone in his face and asking him really stupid questions. Do you like the music you play? Someone asked him. And it was so interesting. it was after he got done with the tours he was committed to, he kept saying, "I can't wait to go home." And he literally didn't tour for 8 years. He was burned out with it. It really affected him. And he said, "Man, I can't stand the booing, man." You have him in the bus afterwards, and he said, "Man, that booing, I can't stand it. I need a new," he even said one time, "I need a new Dylan. I need a new Bob Dylan. I'm going to use him really hard. Give me a new Bob Dylan." Let him go out and do that. I don't want to do it myself anymore.
Well, it just goes to show, man, that, you know, with anything, if it's music or visual art or tech or science, anything you're doing, if you're innovating, you're taking chances. And if you're taking chances, there's some people that just aren't going to be happy with what you're doing.
And especially today where people have voices on the internet, you can post it and just crucify people. I mean, a lot of artists have been greatly hurt by it. I mean,
absolutely.
Ed Sheeran, he's off Twitter because it was too tough and rough. Taylor Swift, a lot of haters on Taylor Swift. You know, yeah. There's some songs about it, "Shake It Off," and some other things. So everybody has to deal with it. The higher you climb, the more detractors there are going to be. And well, so,
circle, man, it's exactly what we started this podcast with. It's the same thing, you know. When the Pistons were beating up on Jordan, I rooted for Jordan. Then when Jordan started winning championships, I'm like, I don't want to see him win anymore. And people do the same thing with musical acts and bands. It's like, that's my band, underground. I love them. That's my band. I feel like everybody else knows about. The punk rock kids did when I was in school with Nirvana. They all loved Nirvana until they blew up and then they hated them. The metal kids loved Metallica until they blew up and then Metallica wasn't metal anymore. But it's the same effect. You know, everybody loves you until you start winning consistently.
The one thing about one guy that I remember, this really stuck on me because I remember when I apparently rented this and watched this maybe when it first came out, Al Kooper. Al Kooper's an interesting cat. I mean, he was a guitar player, and he was one of the founding members. I think he was the founding force behind Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Yeah.
With a horn band. I mean, I don't think if it wasn't for Blood, Sweat, and Tears, it wouldn't have been Chicago. And some of these other great horn bands. I mean, Blood, Sweat, and Tears was the shiz, man. I love some of the stuff they did.
He recorded with Hendrix, too.
Yeah, he did. And then the interesting thing is they were doing a recording for what was the album that just blew out with all the great songs on, like Ballad of a Thin Man and Rolling Stone and down on Desolation Row and all those songs, whatever album that was. Highway 61 Revisited, maybe that one was a huge album. And then through the bums of through the bums of dime, didn't you? What song is that? That's like a Rolling Stone. So it's got that organ part behind it. If you think of that organ part. So Al Kooper was a guitar player. And they already had a guitar player, and he wanted to be on this recording session. I mean, I give the guy props. He's telling this story. And he said that the guy that was playing the organ, they switched him over to piano. So there was an organ there that nobody was playing. He said he didn't know how to play the organ, really, is what he claimed. He obviously did, because when he got in there and played the part, it wasn't bad. And the producer, he says, hey, can I go in and play the organ? And the producer said, you're not an organ player. And then the producer got asked the question, and he got distracted. And so Al said, he didn't say no. Al had balls, man. So he goes in and he sits down at the organ and he starts playing. And you can even hear when they start doing the cut, the producer's coming over the talkback. Hey, what are you doing in there? And he's talking to Al.
I love it.
So Al plays the parts and he says, you can always hear I'm like an eighth or a quarter beat behind because I wasn't sure of the chords I was playing. So I would wait to make sure what the chord was, and then I would play the part. And afterwards, they're doing the playback, and Bob's in the playback. Now, Bob's a star. He's a rock star by this time. And they're playing it back, and Bob Dylan goes, turn up that organ. And the producer goes, he's not an organ player. And Bob goes, I don't care. I like it. Turn it up. And now it's an iconic part of that track. I mean, the organ is very prevalent in Like a Rolling Stone.
Sure, I remember the line. I can hear it when you bring it up.
That was Al Kooper fumbling his way on an organ.
Hey, it's the extra to make it special, man.
Yeah, you know, so, a little classic rock stuff there. That's great. Well, one more thing that I stumbled across today. You're familiar with Patreon. In fact, you have a Patreon account.
I do.
And Patreon is, for those of you who don't know, is a site that was started by a guy named Jack Conti, who's a musician. And he's got a band called, he and his wife have a band called Pomplamoose. And they're out of California. And they do covers, interesting covers. And they really blew up. They've got millions of followers on YouTube. They really blew up when they had the cover of Taylor Swift's song that won the video award, when Kanye West tried to pull the statue out of her hands. She was just a, you know, innocent teenager, and everybody, you know, oh, poor Taylor. And because he thought that Beyonce should have won the award. And so he went up there and tried to pull off her hands. You remember that. And the song, they had covered that song, or the Beyonce song. I don't remember which. One of the songs that was in play there, they had covered it. And suddenly, when people were searching for the song, their cover came up, and they got like 100,000 followers out of that, just because they happened to have covered that song and they were in the right place at the right time. And that boosted their career. And they do really great videos. It's absolutely amazing, the videos that they do. And he started Patreon, because artists have always, through the history, have relied on patrons. I mean, if you go back to the Renaissance period, Michelangelo and all of those cats, you know, they had patrons. They would be hired by, maybe it would be a church, it would be a pope, it could be a private person. The Medicis were patrons, and artists of all sorts have always, and classical artists, classical composers, Bach, Beethoven, they had patrons who would pay them to create symphonies for them. That's how they survived and made money. It's been a fact of life for artists for many years, for many centuries. And so he said, let's modernize that and let's have a, call it a Patreon, which is probably a French way or a Spanish way of saying patron, P-A-R-T-R-O-N, and he put the E in there, Patreon. Maybe it's Spanish. And that was, so he have artists go on there and you sign up, you have an account, and people can subscribe for a certain amount of money. There's different levels. and you get content that's not available anywhere else, whether it be private concerts or it could be anything. And he's been doing this for like 10 or 15 years, I believe. Been some time, Jack Conti. So he also has Pamplemousse. And so he's a musician. Now he's got, I sent you a link to one of his deals where he did a funk cover. Phenomenal. What was that song? Did you see that? I sent that to you. It's a funk cover of a song, live in the studio. Anyway, I came across this where now it's not limited to musicians. You can be any kind of artist. You can even be a comedian. You can be a painter. And there's this guy I'd never heard of. His name is Owen Benjamin. And have you heard of Owen Benjamin?
No.
He's a comedian, I guess. And he is a alternative comedian. And he's trying to state it factually without upsetting anyone. He got some very conservative right-wing beliefs. Like he has spoken at, there's a Flat Earth conference, and he's spoken there, whether it's for comedy or not. He has made comments that he thinks slavery should be brought back. Some extremely, non-mainstream comments and beliefs. Now, whether he's doing it for the effect of comedy, I mean, there's always that attack of, oh, I was only saying that to own the opponents. There's always that method of defending. I wasn't serious. It was a joke. I don't know where he fits in that. But so everybody has banned his videos. Everybody, meaning Twitter and YouTube and Facebook. And Patreon also kicked him off the platform. And apparently he said that he's not even really that big on Patreon. He even forgot that he had a Patreon account. But he's got some rabid followers. And so I just read about this morning because it was amazing to me. Patreon may no longer be no more because they have terms of service, and it's controversial how they handle it. Maybe they didn't handle it that well. They kicked him off because they didn't want what they said, hate speech. They said his stuff was hate speech. Well, all the other platforms kicked off. Now, unfortunately, they're not as big as Twitter. I mean, he's not going to put a dent in Google or Twitter or Facebook. I mean, he can sue him for millions of dollars. Mark Zuckerberg will laugh at that, I suppose. But Patreon is not a big company. It's this musician guy who's not really a businessman. Historically, I think he's trained as a musician. And they have as their terms of service that if you use their site, that you can't sue them, you have to go into arbitration. Now, coincidentally with that, in the state of California where they do business, there's a new law that got passed that said that if you go into arbitration, and if it's a dispute between an individual and a company, the company has to pay almost all the fees for arbitration. Now, arbitration, people think, well, that's going to be cheaper. You can't sue me. Well, the thing about it is it's all private, and it's nothing is covered. Now, if you go into a courtroom, the judge is paid for by the U.S. government. The courthouse is paid for by the U.S. government. There's a lot of supporting things that go into when you have a lawsuit in the U.S. crime system. But if you elect to go into the system of arbitration, all those costs have to be covered by the arbitrators. And the law in California said that almost all of it has to be covered by the corporation if it's an individual against a corporation. This is a new law in California. So you take that, and this Owen Benjamin apparently reached out to, he's got some rabid followers, and he said, I need 100 of you to each file a arbitration case against Patreon. Because users are not only the content creators, but also the end users that pay the money. They define them both as users. So both can apparently file an arbitration case. So each arbitration case could cost easily $10,000. And, $10,000, I mean, 10 would be 100,000, 100 would be a million. And so that's $1 million potentially that could go that Patreon would have to pay. I don't know what their income is, how big a company they are, but they're definitely not big tech. It's a small company that was started by Jack Conti. So there's now talks, there's a lot of articles about it, and they've had a ruling, a judge ruled against their, they tried to get a cease and desist against all these, and this Owen Benjamin actually funded, supposedly funded, $25,000 funded anyone who would, any of his fans who would do a case against Patreon. So.
Terrible.
So it's interesting stuff. I mean, Patreon could be no more. Or Owen Benjamin could own it. I've never heard of Owen Benjamin, but he apparently it's, what's it called? Owen and the Bears, and his supporters are called Bears. And, you know, you read some of the stuff they're talking about, the Jews, you know, they openly say in their articles, the Jews that own social media. It's like, it's a group of conspiracy. I mean, it just, like Flat Earth, again, you know, Flat Earth. I mean, there's a convention for Flat Earth. I mean, I'm just curious to go there and just, you know, incognito and see what they talk about. I mean, you could easily, you know, if there is a Flat Earth, why doesn't somebody go to the edge and take pictures of it? I mean.
Crazy.
You can literally fly around the world. You know, you literally can get on a plane, fly around the world. I'm just amazed. Just amazed. You know, now are they just trolling people? I mean, that's probably the defense. You know, that's a well-used defense. Oh, it was all a joke and we're just trolling you libs. You know, but.
Insane.
Now he spoke there. I don't know if he was, if he supports it, but, if he was just making comedy, I mean, you know, he lives in that comedy area, I guess.
Just making money. He's just money. Believes it or not, he's tapped into his audience.
Could be. I don't know.
That has an audience.
No. So, he's got rabid fans. I mean, there's Reddit. There's Reddit subreddits that are based, are just on this subject. Patreon versus Owen Benjamin. There's entire subreddit forums where people are posting. I mean, it's, and I'm amazed that I only came across it this morning because I was on, I happened to come across another artist that I follow, and he had posted a video. Apparently he just started a Patreon account, and he posted a video saying, hey, join my Patreon account. You know, it was up, like if you would post a video saying, hey, here's my Patreon account. This is what we're going to be doing. This is what we're going to be offering. Here are the options to opt in. And some of the comments were below. One of the comments was, well, I'm not going to join it. I'm afraid that all the money that goes to Patreon is going to be used for legal fees. I'm like, legal fees? Patreon being sued? Somehow it had not reached my level of, there's so much information. You can't know everything. And somehow that had not been on any of my news feeds. And so I started Googling it. And I spent about 45 minutes to an hour deep dive because there's a ton of information about it. It's been going on since last probably almost a year. It's going on with, between Patreon. And it's in the courts. You know, they're suing outside the arbitration, even though they're not supposed the terms of service are that you can't sue, but now there's lawsuits being filed and counter lawsuits, and it's becoming a mess. So, just interesting.
It's terrible that a company with the best intentions can be taken down like that.
Well, the supporters of Owen and the Bears would say that, you know, we, it's free speech. We should be able to say that. So, you know, there's always in different opinions.
Shame on you guys.
I mean, I don't believe the earth is flat. I mean, that's only part of it. Anti-Semitism is a problem. I mean, that's what started World War II. You know, and he's a Holocaust denier. Owen Benjamin is a Holocaust denier. It never really happened. I mean, you can go to the camps. You can go to the camps in Germany. They still have his museums, Auschwitz, and.
Guy, Tim.
What's that?
He sounds like a real sweetheart of a guy.
Yeah. So if you don't study history and know it, you're doomed to repeat it. That's what I'll say about that. And it's a real thing. So
it's scary. Well, like that gets traction.
Yeah, it's amazing that that kind of stuff gets traction. I agree 100%. Well, can we end on a good note? What do you got for a good note? You got a joke? You got anything?
No, I would just like to express to that dude's followers, don't be a terrible person today.
All right.
Patreon was a great platform. Be ashamed if something happened to it. Because I'll really miss that $15 a month.
Have you been following up and putting special content up on there?
I do my best, man. Get what you pay for kind of thing.
Well, Chris Greener, the coach that I've been taking, Chris Greener, Manifest, he suggests that you have your own. He's leaving Patreon. Not because of that, I don't think. He never mentioned that. But he said that he's moving it all to ClickFunnels and having his control of it himself. He'll have his own. Because Patreon does take 30%.
Sure.
I think, is it 30%? They take a percentage. So you, people.
I could be making like $18 a month.
Yeah.
I feel cheated all of a sudden.
All right. Should we call it?
Let's call it, man. Good to see all you.
Right. Jimmy Dean and the Wolf. See you next time.